Okay, I'm recording too. So are you ready, Dwayne?
I'm ready. So, we share screen?
Unless BL's gonna do an introduction first.
Okay, go ahead, BL.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome. We're still trying to figure out this new system of Zoom. It has much better video capability than what we're used to, but we don't know how to use it all exactly. So, re-say and answer, how do you mute yourself? I think you just press your microphone. I think everybody is muted right now. Except for us attendees, and I am going to turn it over to Dwayne, and he's going to share his screen and start his great presentation.
Well, thank you, BL. I'd like to extend my appreciation to the Moya School for their sponsoring of this work. Also, BL and Rose for their many talents that is making this possible. And of course, all of you who have taken time from your busy schedules to join us. So we're going to break some new ground today and also do some recapitulation. Can everybody hear my voice? Because if not, you need to raise your hand so that we can work out any audio problems right from the start.
Okay, I don't see any hands raised, so that tells me everybody can hear you. And we knew earlier that they were able to hear you, so I think we're good to go.
We're going to explore in this session, amongst other things, what the Tibetan calls etheric evolution. And when we look at the contributions that have been made by the Buddha and the Christ, we begin to understand the importance of cycles and how the Buddha basically grounded triadic energy onto the high mental plane, and Jesus, working on the astral level, grounded triadic energy . We seem to have a small technical difficulty here . Okay, thank you . Jesus, overshadowed by the Christ, was able to bring down these powerful forces down to the astral plane. And the Christ in this cycle will attempt to bring it down onto the physical etheric levels where the different forms are created and where, of course, they reside. So we're moving into a cycle of synthesis, and it's going to be brought down through Aquarian energies, Uranus, right down to modification of matter. Bringing it up to a much higher level to receive these great impressions. This is a wonderful introductory quote that I'm going to read that the Tibetan gives in Cosmic Fire. As time elapses, the work of the heavenly men in the cosmic etheric spheres will be better comprehended and assisted intelligently by those lesser intelligences who, by the study of the physical ethers, will eventually hold the key of the greater manifestation. Science is the handmaiden of wisdom and opens the door to those infinite reaches and to those cosmic expanses where stand those vaster intelligences who manipulate the matter of the higher planes and bend it to the desired form, causing the vibration thus set up to be felt at the furthest bounds of the solar rings past not. Automatically then, all lesser lives and all the denser materials are swept and carried into the needed channels and forms. This is another powerful introductory quote. We're from Cosmic Fire, DK speaking on the rules for white magic, says that the magician must recognize the shade of violet hue which the devas exhibit to work with them effectively. In this new cycle we're moving into, it will no longer be enough just to get a theoretical outline of the deva and angelic kingdoms. We need to know their signatures, their colors, their sounds, their numerical relationships, and their vibrational frequencies. Because to build this bridge, to go to the previous quote, effectively, we must know who we are, what assets we have to work with, and what meditation and alignment techniques we will need to develop to go from the four lower physical etheric levels of the human person, which we're going to explore, and build that bridge to the four spiritual ethers of the logoic, monadic, atmic, and buddhic planes. We've studied extensively in earlier presentations the law of correspondence and the law of analogy, the law of septenary sevens, and they all relate towards an understanding of bridge building through like attracts like, and opposites often repel. So let's look at this and see on this chart what the Tibetan means by building a bridge from the four higher spiritual ethers to the four human ethers. When you look on the right-hand side of this chart, thank you, Rose, you'll see at the bottom it says, bottom right, follow my cursor, physical, etheric, astral, mental, buddhic, atmic. The next one would be monadic, and then the last one would be logoic. How do these four higher spiritual ethers play upon the physical etheric? Now, if you look carefully at the very bottom, you'll see we have four higher human etheric subplanes. And they're colored translucent lavender, number one, light violet, two, violet, three, and purple, four. These four human etheric subplanes have a direct link with these four higher ones. And when you can recognize the lower Davic groups and angelic groups that work through us individually, and most importantly, as a group, we will have found the necessary bridge building materials between us and these four higher levels. There are many, many different types of meditation techniques, visualizations that assist in this work, but what I'm referring to is a more specialized type of seventh ray magic that will characterize some of these Aquarian energies that are pouring in. Okay, next image. Can you click the next image, Rose, for us? Okay, we skipped one. There's actually an image after, right there, 27. Now, this is a blow up of the lower part of the previous chart, just so that everyone has an opportunity to understand what we're outlining here. Now, if you look to the left, you see Logoic, Monadic, Atmic, Buddhic. And these again are the divine etheric subplanes, and this is the direct relationship to the four human. And it's this type of seventh ray presentation that gives meaning to the statement, as above, so below, or man is a direct reflection of the cosmos or God, because there is, beyond our restrictive time and space continuum, a direct relationship between these two entities. Any questions up to this point? I understand this is a little technical, but when we get into some of the animations, I want to have laid sort of a foundation that gives clarity, not just through the intuition, which is the main goal here, but also mentally. Rose, could you go to the next image? Okay, no questions up to this point?
Whoops, I don't see any.
You don't see any image?
No, I'm sorry, I don't see any questions.
Okay, thank you. This is a quotation that I may repeat during each one of our sessions. It is of such import and significance. And when we get into astrology, we will be able to interface what DK calls the most esoteric science, the oldest and most esoteric science, which is esoteric astrology, and his statement with the greatest science is the science of electricity that all humanity and groups will have to master. And we'll see how those two fit together. But in any event, let's read this quickly because it is nothing short of revolutionary. If this treatise serves no other purpose than to direct the attention of the scientific and philosophic students to the study of force or energy in man, in groups, and to interpret man and the human family in terms of electrical phenomena, much good will have been accomplished. The polarity of a man, of a group, and of a congeree of groups, the polarity of the planets and their relationship to each other and to the sun, the polarity of the solar system and its relationship to other systems, the polarity of one plane to another and of one principle to another, the polarity of the subtler vehicles and the scientific application of the laws of electricity to the totality of existence on the physical plane will bring about a revolution upon the planet second only to that effected at the time of individualization. I would point out here a certain significant fact which students will do well carefully to consider.
Duane?
Yes.
Before you go on, Anne Veronica has a question. She says, the sacral center and the solar center are lavender. What does this mean?
The solar plexus center in
I think it may have been in your image a couple of images ago.
We'll have to skip back to that.
There, that image.
Is this what she's referring to?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, are you referring to the little image in the center? I have to have some clarification.
Anne, are you there?
If you look at that
yes.
little
person, yes, she said yes.
Okay, if you're looking at that little person, the first base of the spine is orange, the next one is violet. That's the sacral center. Then you have the next one would be the solar plexus, which would be rose. Disregard what you have here. The heart would be yellow, the throat would be green, and then you have the higher head centers. I apologize, this is just a simplification that all of these energies play through the person, the man and the woman. And this chart goes with another chart that I can't really show you right now because it would take too much time. But thank you for bringing that to my attention. You've got some serious Virgo there to note that those actually are not correct. Okay.
And that brought up.
Yes.
Hold on, we got one more. Orest says electricity will need to be redefined. And Anne said, yes, she is a Virgo.
Well, Orest is correct. Our understanding of electricity is primitive, and it only is based on the fact that we've been using it since the turn of the century, and we have only scratched the surface of what DK calls the electricity of the etheric plane. And this is what we're going to explore, the electricity of the astral plane, mental plane, and the buddhic. They're all qualities of electricity of different intensities, illuminating power, brilliance. This is an image that I've shared several times, but it's worth recapitulating. This is an image that shows the relationship of electricity between the rays and the planes. But as you can see, there are several levels of polarity. It's not just as simple that the rays are positive and the planes are receptive, or what we often say, masculine, feminine, but meaning that in its highest aspect. If you take just on the left-hand column, the seven rays by themselves, ray one is positive, but ray two is receptive or feminine. Ray 3 positive, Ray 4 feminine. 5 positive, 6 receptive or feminine. And also, if we flip to the right-hand side, we see that the overall designated polarity is negative, but as you work down, you see they also alternate. And if you look carefully and follow my cursor, do you see where there's numerically 1 through 7, 1 through 7, indicating that the 7 planes have 7 subplanes, and the 7 rays respectively on the left side have 7 subplanes. These also have their individual charges or electrical polarities. So this is why, this is what keeps energies in a composite, but each maintaining their own separate identity. And we're going to explore that visually. Any questions on that?
I don't see any questions so far.
Okay, this is... a magnet, and you can see the electrical and magnetic forces coming, pouring out from the top and circulating down and then being drawn back up through the center. And I'm going to show an animated image that outlines what we've just given on electricity and polarity. Only in the animation, you'll begin to see how energy is drawn, it's pushed and it's pulled from and away from its opposite pole, but there are many subsidiary poles. See the little dots on the right and the left? You're going to be able to observe the energy circulating, curling in little circular eddies as this master magnet goes through its little dance. Now, my icons have suddenly moved. Right where my cursor is, Rose, is supposed to be the videos.
Isn't it called Morify Videos?
Yes, but I don't see it.
Okay, it's up higher. Go up, up, and then to the left. Now go to the left. 3 more to the left. Next one over.
Okay. Thank you. No, it's Moya 5A videos.
You have.
It's was right next to this one, and it's called Moya 5A. Videos.
Let's try seeing if you can click on the link in the click on the link in the PowerPoint. It might just open it. It'll bring back up your PowerPoint. Just double click on that.
Sorry for the sound effects. The 5A rows all have, see,
okay.
I have to find the 5A.
Okay. All right. Well, let's close that one.
Just do a search.
All right.
I apologize for this technical difficulty, but this is what happens when you try something new.
Okay. I think I may have found it, and I think it was up a little bit from where the other folder was.
Okay. Could you direct my cursor? I'm going up.
I have to find it again.
Okay.
No, maybe I.
Okay. Do you have a
search?
File? Do you have a file name, Dwayne?
Other than Voya 5A video.
All right. All right, hold on. Let me have the mouse. When you're clicking things,
okay, I can't. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So I want to do a different search. Is it this one here, 5-A?
I don't see what you're pointing to.
It's up here.
That's it. That's it. Can you put that on my desktop, please?
We're just going to leave it open. It'll
okay,
be on the tab.
That's fine. That'll work. Okay, I apologize for the technical difficulty, and I want everybody to sort of go into more of a reflective, meditative state and view this. I'll repeat it several times, and then we'll discuss it. Now my PowerPoint, okay, I see my PowerPoint. Okay, the idea of energy moving, the idea of polarity is very, very powerfully represented in that animation. And I would go so far to say that this may be one of the most closest approximations of the Antakarana that can be useful as a visualization. Now, I want you to imagine that these dots, now, there's basically seven chakras, and we have more here, but I want you to imagine as the energy circulates, it goes through these subsidiary channels or vortices or stations. Now, liberation is when the energy circulates freely at the fourth, beginning at the third, and ending at the fifth and sixth, relatively speaking, where the positive and negative, base of the spine, top of the head, are perfectly aligned and there are no obstructions. There's no intermediaries. But on this image, you also have how the energy gets caught in these whirlpools and it slowly works its way up like Jacob's ladder or through the chakra system. And you could take each person who's undergoing initiation and you could find, if we compare this to all of the chakras and centers that DK gives in all of his books, you could actually pinpoint where each person is in their triangle work and in their alignment. But again, this is just a broad and general outline just to show the free flow of energy and how important it is to see energy in movement. Are there any questions up to this point?
Yes. Anne says that you explain the polarity between the rays and the planes, but what about looking at them horizontally? Why the first ray is positive and the first plane is negative?
Why is that so? Because magnetically, that's how it works. And I apologize if that's not a good answer, but that's, is there someone else in the group that would like to share their insights on that question?
Isn't the Tibetan somewhere?
You'll have to speak up a little, Rose. I can barely hear you.
Didn't the Tibetan somewhere lay out a table or diagram of the relationship between the...
You're once again fading. I don't know if anybody else can hear you.
Didn't the Tibetan give a diagram or a table of the rays in the plane somewhere?
I'm sure it's one of other of his tabulations, of which there are many. And my tabulations are only meant to simplify what the Tibetan has said in his many works. And if you want a more accurate rendition, I suggest you go to his works and look at his charts and tabulations. But we do know that the planes are the third aspect of deity, active intelligence, and the rays are the second aspect of deity and of love wisdom. So consequently, you have to have those two poles interacting all the time to create form. And we'll probably get into that a little more extensively as we move through the presentation, keeping in mind that ray one is the impulse and it is the potency behind these other two interacting forces. It's the hidden Laya point or point of stillness or black hole or what DK calls Fohat. Any questions?
Orest says, does it require a caduceus? And I think he was referring to your magnet polarity thing there.
Yes. We're going to be showcasing John DePue's work shortly that Orest was very kind to share with me. And it's nothing short of revelation. And it shows the caduceus and the fleur-de-lis and a number of other very common symbols that have been used by states, countries, and by esotericists, whether they were alchemists, white magicians, or whatever tradition, and we're going to move into that. Now, still on the subject of electricity, we're going to show another image, and hopefully this time we won't have the crazy background music that I've tried to mute and was unsuccessful, but this one, now that we have the right folder, should work. When you study electricity, you have to realize it's not as simple as just one positive pole and one negative pole. Within that matrix, there are subsidiary poles, and there are multiple configurations of poles. And to go back to our earlier work in our last session with eights, how the figure eight constantly expresses the different levels of energy or the different chakra systems from the very lowest to the very highest is applicable here, because you will see the configuration of eight. For any of you who have studied the crosses, you have in astrology the mutable, fixed, and cardinal crosses. And I think some of these images that we will be presenting later on, we're going to apply to the crosses, and you'll see how energy can come from different directions and have multiple electrical interactions simultaneously. So having said that, let's try to minimize it. Doesn't seem to want to minimize. Okay, there we go. No, perfect. Thank you. The Moya 5 video, no. It seems like the Moya 5 has disappeared again, Rose.
No, it's on your taskbar. It's right down here. Go to your taskbar a little lower.
Okay, I see it. Thank you.
Yeah, just leave that up, so.
Now I can't.
Right click on it. And just right click, make full screen.
So again, take a minute or two and make this as a meditation. Four magnets or magnetic relationships all interacting at the same time. And you could see the very center, that dark center, that would be the will, the point of abstraction that impulses electricity through the descending bridge of Fohat and out into the material world. Initiation is entering into the flow, or as the Buddhists say, stepping into the stream. And electricity looks very much like moving water, and it has many similarities.
Dwayne?
Okay. Yes. Any questions?
Ann asks, is this one or four magnets?
Four, each with a positive and negative.
And Arrest says, nodal points of platonic forms as electrical focus outlets? It's a question.
Absolutely, and I always appreciate Orest's questions because they're also an answer in themselves. They're intelligently asked, but they're also very poetic, very definitely. Thank you for that, Orest. Okay, so we're going to explore a little bit about the human auric field and science in its exploration of the atom. This is a common image that you can get almost anywhere on the auric field. And I'm not attempting to reproduce this with any occult accuracy. It's just an attempt to show that the human auric field is these concentric spherical bands that move out in intensity and in size as each person undergoes spiritual growth and initiation. And so you have to imagine that the etheric and the astral and mental and these causal fields are huge. They're what connect people telepathically. Okay, we've already discussed this quotation, but let's just review it one more time since it's so powerful. This is the Christ speaking about the mysteries, DK speaking about the reappearance of the Christ and the reappearance of the hierarchy and mysteries and electricity. It is these mysteries which Christ will restore upon his reappearance, thus reviving the churches in a new form and restoring the hidden mystery which they long have lost through their materialism. The true mysteries will also reveal themselves through science, and the incentive to search for them there will be given by the Christ. The mysteries contain, within their formulas and teachings, the key to the science which will unlock the mystery of electricity, the greatest spiritual science and area of divine knowledge in the world, the fringes of which have only just been touched. Only when the hierarchy is present visibly on earth, and the mysteries of which the disciples of the Christ are the custodians, are given openly to the world, will the true secret and nature of electrical phenomena be revealed. I believe and feel confident that this is taking place right now, that there are many scientific groups that have a much more spiritual inclination than ever before historically. And if you want to see a demonstration of that, go to the Thunderbolts Project on YouTube and connect in with that site, because they have a constant resource of revelations around science in its discovery of electricity and magnetism and how it affects everything, particularly these great star systems. Okay, any questions up to this point?
I don't see any right now.
This is a common depiction of an atom with its protons and neutrons in the center, and these little black dots are the electrons. And you can see a lot of these images as like little solar systems, like the planets whirling around the sun. But according to more advanced recognition of the atom, it's really seen as clouds or shells, electrical magnetic shells. And, excuse me. And these electrons are paired up, and each one of these shells has a certain number of electrons, and they have an equal number of electrons going one way or going in simultaneously going the other. To just recapitulate what the Tibetan said in some of our earlier quotes last session about centrifugal and centripetal force, and astrologically going around the chart, the mundane chart, clockwise, and then when you fall under the initiatory experience, you go around the astrological wheel counterclockwise. So science, with what it's revealing, parallels in many respects exactly what esoteric tradition is saying. Now, this is taken from a book on quantum mechanics, and it just simply says the circles where electrons orbit are referred to as energy shells or levels. Electrons in the outermost circle have higher energy, since it requires more effort to pull the electron a greater distance from the nucleus. Well, we could create a perfect analogy between this and the first image I showed of a person in their auric field. To extend the potency of your chakras and your auric sheaths requires effort. And why is that? Because the electrical makeup of those higher bodies is so much more intense, and you have to push your way through all these lower Devic and elemental groups And technically, this is what initiation is. It's the ability to transmutate or to confine, in some cases, through white magic, certain hindering energies so that you can extend your electrical vibratory force out into greater and greater rings past knot. Once again, what is the esoteric definition of rings past knot? It means beyond this, you lawfully cannot go because electrically you have been confined into this area because of a lack of understanding, correct discipline, working on karma. I mean, there's many factors that hinder the growth of the individual. But this is a very powerful statement that the higher energy requires more effort to pull the electron a greater distance from the nucleus, the proton and neutron. And here's a little image of sort of what I showed earlier, that they come in pairs and they circulate. Electrons occupy orbitals. They spin on their axis. If two electrons occupy an orbital, they must spin in opposite directions. This is the Pauli exclusion principle in law. Okay, so any questions up to this point?
No, I don't see any right now.
This is the same chart that I showed you earlier, only it's done in a more circular way. And it shows the rays on the left and the planes on the right in these concentric circles. And they rotate in opposite directions. And it's this opposite directions that causes, for lack of a better word, occult friction. And the occult friction is what creates spheres, what creates spherical life. First ray, impulses down through these different threads from the upper triad. When they impact these lower levels of elemental substance, they begin to wobble. I want you to imagine a straight line coming from Shambhala, or the will of the Father, and this straight line, as it moves into interference or into inertia, it's slowed down. Well, what happens when something is slowed down? Imagine looking at a moving stream that is rushing straight and clear, and then it hits an obstruction. What does it do? The water, by law, curls. It curls into these eddies, and that's what we're going to explore with John DePew, how energy is forced into these vortical formations, into these spheres, and how it creates certain types of sacred geometry that are universal. So here we have the rays and the planes as circles, but imagine they're spheres. They're not circles, they're spheres. Okay, we've already discussed some of this, so I'm going to skip a little bit. And this would be the rays. This is a blow up of one of the earlier images. It's just one little point of one ray. And can you see how seven rays crossing over or interacting with another seven rays have this natural affinity? I mean, you can just look at that and intuitively say it's balanced, it's organic, it has a type of peace or harmony. And when you get into these different Asian and Oriental treaties of philosophy and yoga and esotericism, you will find that they can be broken down into geometric forms, And what this is right here is a small attempt to show the student of Buddhism or Hinduism that when you study the rays as energy and force, it can cross-pollinate itself with all traditions because it's more of a universal science. There's no cultural or historical baggage that comes. And DK does make the statement that one day there'll be a new language of energy and force, and it will not be, we will not use these Oriental and Asian names. There will be new names for the West. And that's not to say this in a derogatory way, because the East has made these fabulous contributions, and without them, we wouldn't be here now. But there has to be a new interpretation in a more scientific vein in the West. You and I, all of us, and all of the groups we work with are attempting to do this in one way or another. Okay, let's go to the next image. This is the rays in the plains. Now, again, this is just one small, this is just one ray and one plane. And the through the law of septenary sevens, like fractals, they keep duplicating themselves infinitely on larger scales and on smaller scales. This is a good image because it shows the tension. Can you see the tension in this? And yet, the tension is creative. In the other one, it was like attracts like, and opposites repel. But that's not necessarily always accurate. It depends on the level you're operating on and the level of development. But here in this, again, you can see the tension. And you can see the crossover point. You can see the white dot with the black dot in center. That's the will of the Father. If you can imagine that's coming down, if as you look at that, imagine an imaginary line between your eye and that black dot. And imagine that's Fohat or Shambhala pouring down from the higher planes, and then when it impacts the lower Devic and elemental substance, it fans out into these conical vortical shells. Okay, any questions up to this point? And this, of course, is one of my favorite depictions. And if anybody wants to raise their hand to ask a question, feel free to do it. This is called Penrose's Twister. And this is taken directly from plasma physicists, quantum mechanics. This is not some new age image, which would be breathtaking even by itself. It's actually from contemporary science. And this is the idea of Fohat being that center point, that line, that vertical line that comes down, it wells up. If you recall some of our previous presentations, it wells up apparently out of nowhere, just like a beautiful flower in the spring pushes up from the earth, because we can't see the etheric constitution of that plant or that flower. And so somebody who doesn't understand the dynamic would say it's a miracle. But it's not a miracle. It's science. And we flower exactly like the rose or the lotus from apparently out of nowhere. And we form these conical electrical shells. If you can see my cursor, one would be positive, the next one would be negative. One would be positive, negative. And this is like a cutaway, and it's very powerful. It's called Penrose's Twister. Now, here's another powerful image taken directly from plasma physicists. Cosmic magnetic fields like that of the sun, the earth, or our galaxy are generated by turbulent dynamo processes. So right around you as an individual person, around your soul, around all the people in the group, around each ashram, each master, each planetary logo eye, each solar system, each constellation, are the same dynamic of two energies rotating in the opposite direction. And down below it says the helical flow generates a magnetic field as shown in the image above. In both cases, we show isosurfaces of magnetic field strengths. Blue and red signify different directions of the field. Okay, now we're going to go back into the theosophical idea of the aura and the different magnetic fields. And this is taken from Ledbetter's Occult Chemistry, and it shows what is called a permanent atom, and it shows how there's a feminine rotating clockwise and a masculine rotating counterclockwise. But I say that with a certain reservation, because if we were standing from a different position, they might be rotating in the opposite directions. So point of view and direction of comprehension is really critical. So that is how they speak of the different atoms. We have a physical permanent atom, astral permanent atom, mental permanent atom, buddhic, and all the way up. And each one is somewhat different, but they do share certain common characteristics in that they're vertical and they rotate. This is a blow up of the spirals. In the two images before this, we could see clearly this vertical formation that rotated down, reached the bottom, and then it rotated back up, only to once again return. That motion summarizes all cyclic growth and development of all living organisms. And even in nature, you can see that in symmetry, but particularly on the etheric. So again, this is taken from Principles of Light and Color by Babbitt, Elwood Babbitt, who wrote a beautiful book called Principles of Light and Color that DK AAB uses and talks about a little bit in one of the books. So we have these magnetic bands within magnetic bands within magnetic bands. Okay, let's get a description of this right from, this might be from that Occult Chemistry by Ledbetter. Yes. Okay, force pours into the heart-shaped depression at the top of the anu and issues from the point and is changed in character by its passage. Further, force rushes through every spiral and every spirelli, and the changing shades of color that flash out from the rapidly revolving and vibrating anu depend on the several activities of the spirals. Sometimes one, sometimes another, is thrown into more energetic action, and with the charge of activity from one spiral to another, the colors change. Very poetic, isn't it? This one is equally as powerful. This divine anu, or ultimate atom, turns incessantly upon its own axis, spinning like a top. The Anu has, as observed so far, three proper motions. Motions of its own, independent of any imposed upon it from outside. It turns incessantly upon its own axis, spinning like a top. It describes a small circle. It has a regular pulsation, a contraction and expansion, like the pulsation of the heart. When a force is brought to bear upon it, it dances up and down, flings itself widely from side to side, and performs the most astonishing and rapid gyrations. But the three fundamental motions incessantly persist. If it be made to vibrate as a whole, at the rate which gives any one of the seven colors, the world belongs to that color glow, and it glows out brilliantly. An electric current brought to bear upon the Anu checks their proper motions, i.e. renders them slower. The Anu exposed to it arranges themselves in parallel lines, and in each line the heart-shaped depression receives the flow, which passes out through the apex into the depression of the next, and so on. The Anu always set themselves to the current. Well, we are all divine atoms and Anus, and we set ourselves to the currents that are pouring through us. And when the soul pours through us, this is what causes transmutation and change. Yes, we can wake up one day and say, I'm going to be a better person, I'm not going to do this, and I should do that. And yes, that's important. But what really changes the person in his or her totality is the ability to meditate and draw down this conduit of electrical force through the opening aperture at the top and see it circulating down through visualizing, feeling it, and the spirelli, those bands that we spoke about earlier, have a direct relation to the chakra system. Okay, any questions up to this point? We're coming up for...
Yeah, I don't see any right now.
Okay, this is what the planet Earth would look like, seen as its atomic structure on the inner planes. Remember, this is only one of, well, seven levels. The Father Vortex comes in at the northernmost point, exits at the southernmost point, and circulates back up around and goes through the same dynamic or dance consistently. The only difference is each time it follows that prescribed course, it never returns on the same level, because we're talking about something that can happen in the flash of an instant, or it can be something that happens over thousands and tens of thousands or even millions of years, and experience is gained with each loop, each rotation, each completion. And that would be like the completion of a cycle. So I want everyone here to get a sense that cycles are really the vast movement of creative energy that sweep in these great angelic and devic forces that are really more synthetic and holistic. Okay, and now we're going to end this part with a very profound animation. And before I play it, I just want to point out that this has all the seven colors of the rays and the planes, and they're working in unison together to create a living and vibrant organism. And this next image and others like this will be used in the future to help people in their meditations and alignments, because if words are two or three or four steps away from the thing in itself, the actual spiritual energy on the inner planes. Well, these images that you're being presented with here are only several steps away. And if you can take them into your meditations and duplicate them on the high mental plane, that is where the real magic takes place. Looking at them can be very, very influential, and it can be very powerful, and you can have many intuitive insights. But if you really want to bring down soul light and causal energy, you have to take them onto the high mental plane and visualize them there. So having said that, we're going to go back. Thank you, Rose, for organizing this. I'd be lost without her patience and help. Okay. Now, this actually has music to it, so I want you to take a deep breath, get comfortable in your chair, forget about everything I've just said, and just move with this dance, because this is your dance. This is the dance of the group. Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. There's a reason why classical music is held in such high esteem by those initiates and disciples and advanced humanity that have studied and meditated on these great compositions. In fact, in the Dina books, the Tibetan takes several of his students who have too much 1, 3, 5, 7 in their makeup, rays 1, 3, 5, and 7. And he tells them that they're way too mentally developed and they need to bring the feminine into their spiritual work. And he recommends that they go listen to the great symphonies of music in the world. Beautiful, beautiful way to balance out and to invoke the high astral, the high psychic, and most importantly, the intuition. Any comments or questions up to this point?
Yes. When you were showing the Earth there, the image right above the one we just saw, Arrest had just typed in, and boy, I'm probably going to murder this, piezoelectricity and crystals due to the pressure and the heat?
I don't know. I wish I had an answer for that. But crystals do magnify and generate electricity. And whether it's in a computer or whether there are crystals on the inner planes, it's not just the ones that we're familiar with, although they're certainly respectfully important to study and research, especially their coloring and how they're shaped, how they're cut. But crystals, crystals deal with numbers and geometry and angles, and all sacred geometry can be reduced to the Platonic solids or the polyhedral. But we have to keep in mind that when those magic designs are set in motion, they morph, they change, they become something different, but they are inherently, it's almost like a snowflake it descending as a drop of water first, and then when it reaches the cold earth plane, it turns into this beautiful fractal. But it's still the same thing. Thank you, Orest.
Yeah, we may, like I said, I probably murdered that word that he was talking about, the piezo electricity. Basically, I, as I understand it, it's the electric charge that builds up in these crystals. I think that's what he was referring to.
Excellent.
And then Ruby says, that was inspiring, and I can see how this can be so transformational and invoke more of what is possible in life for each of us, both as individuals and as a group or a whole.
Excellent. That's a beautiful and very deep comment. Thank you. Any other suggestions or comments or questions?
That's all I see right now.
Since we're coming close to the end of our presentation, I'd like to just skip through what we're going to review next presentation. And again, if there's any questions, Orest turned me on to John DePew and his theories about electricity and energy. And we're going to get into that quite a bit next presentation. And here is the caducus, or the, it's called by many things, but it's like the fleur-de-lis, where you have two energies rising up a common column, and then they turn. And this is done through color, geometry, through heat, light, and the different groups of Devic and angelic beings. And here's your eight. But you have to see this eight as a tube. We're going to explore this in the next session. And here's what is called Birkeland currents. They're actually twisted ropes of electrical force. This is straight from physics now. That energy passes from one level or from one direction to another direction, and they wind themselves into cables. And then we're going to explore the tetractys. DK talks about the tetractys, the inverted tetractys, and how they represent these very high levels. Well, over here on the left, we have a Pythagorean, then we have a Hebrew tetractys, then an astrological one, then we have one of my own, and then we have one of John, actually it's Josh Toms, and I'm going to play that one for us right now, and we'll play it again. But to those of you who are familiar with the tetractys, this is an amazing, so look at this as a meditation. Okay, see the tetractys? This is exactly what I just shared with you, only in a tabulation or image that was still. What we're doing here is we're seeing through the eye of an artist the same identical thing, only in motion. And do you see how each one crosses over with interference patterns and affects the others? Imagine these are all ray bars. And then we're going to go into reciprocal spheres, waves. And how energy actually moves on the inner planes. Take that as a suggestion, just use this as a final ending spot and just make it into a meditation.
Okay, I want to say Arrest has said that the Art of Clay Taylor is the correct website.
Okay, Clay Taylor. Let me write that down. I appreciate that. Thank you for that correction. Yes, this other gentleman is another artist that does similar things, but thank you. Excellent. Okay, so that's what we're going to get into next presentation, and we're going to get into astrology. Let me just synthesis an astrology. The idea that there are only really six astrological signs, they have to be taken in pairs, because the pairs create polarity. This is a visual example of that. And DK says, and we're going to explore this in great detail next presentation. Risa, are you still with us? She's a very advanced esoteric astrologer, and she may have other responsibilities. But if you're there, Risa, raise your hand. Anyway, this is a statement from the Tibetan where he says that these different constellations are critical for the transmutation of man at this time, and they pour down to the earth through this pentagram. Did somebody say something?
I just unmuted Risa, but I don't hear her, so.
Okay. Well, she cuts in, I'll stop and we'll I want to ask her something. Okay, so the Tibetan says, this is a very, very important symbol. And then he says, when visualizing these diagrams, this is just one of several, he says, the symbol should be seen in rapid revolution, italics mine. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute before we actually demonstrate what a five-pointed staff would look like in rapid revolution. This is just a hint of what we're going to be exploring next session. So if, okay, this is the image you're going to see, only rotating at high speed. Okay, I've gone to the wrong spot. We go down here, and here we go. Okay, this is the one. Very good. Okay, I'm going to do this several times because it happens pretty fast. This is the five-pointed star flashing forth. So when you think of those four constellations, the Earth at the bottom of the five-pointed star, I want you to think of this image. Now here it is, slowed down a little bit. No, let's do it again. It's my humble opinion that in the future, we're not simply going to get another 24 volumes of esoteric outlines. Excuse me. We have to take what we've already been given and translate it into a more recognizable form. And some of these images, as primitive as they are, and I apologize for the technical difficulties, for the solid month that I've been working on these, I have held that folder in the same spot every day, and now all of a sudden today it decides to disappear and go someplace else. But we will find out why that is so we don't have those kind of disruptions. But, okay, good.
Any all right. Risa is here, and she can talk to you now if you have a question for her. Yes, and also, you have a question from Frances Wilkinson when you're done with Risa.
Okay. Risa, can she hear my voice?
I can hear you. I'm here, Duane, and I can hear your voice.
Okay, excellent. Did you just see the rotating five-pointed star?
I did.
Okay, excellent. And this is important because I know that you're a very advanced astrologer and you're always bringing in new and creative things into your work. And there may be other, I don't know if Walter is still with us, Walter Poulin, but he's also a very advanced esoteric astrologer. And he's just recently put on his site the triple sun meditation into a animation. Is Walter here? Okay.
I don't see him.
Okay. Well, good, Risa. Keep up the good work and thank you.
Thank you, Duane. Thank you for your work, too. It's exceptional.
Oh, appreciate that. Okay, another question?
Yes. Go ahead, please, Frances. I'm trying to unmute you, but I can't unmute you. Are you? I'm trying to unmute you, Frances, but I can't do it. Can you unmute yourself?
Can't unmute Francis either.
I'm sorry, I can't unmute you. Can you type your question, Francis? I'm sorry, I can't.
Can he hear you? Because he can just type it.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping, but I don't see any new typings, and I just can't unmute him for some reason.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? And if Francis comes through, we'll put him on. Any other sharing? Anybody?
There, we got him.
Oh, you can hear me?
Francis. Yes.
Okay.
I thought you went to Tahoe with your sons.
No, they're keeping Tahoe blue, we hope. Yeah.
Good to hear.
Mine is just a statement and how much I appreciate it, and how, for me, it demonstrates the axiom, as above, so below.
Excellent.
I was reminded as you were speaking of Marshall McLuhan's statement back in the 50s of the medium is the message. And to me, as you were demonstrating, electricity is the message.
Excellent. Love you, brother, and thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional comments? I got 3 more minutes.
3 whole more minutes.
Wouldn't be natural for me to get through early.
Orest says gratitude.
Thank you, brother. Love you. And I appreciate everyone taking time from their busy lives and schedules to be a part of this, because all these minds and hearts focused on these symbols energizes them. It's not just some artist that's put something up. It's a symbol of our inner identity. It's a composite of all of us. Excellent. So with that, if there's no additional questions, we will sign off. I send my light and my love to everybody in the group, and they have my email if they want to inquire further. And I'll be happy to work with them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Risa says thank you to Dwayne, Rose, and BL. Thanks, Risa.
Thank you.
Good night, good day, good afternoon, everybody.
Trying to see where I stopped the recording. Stop, share. Okay, good. Was that you, Rose?
Are you going to end the webinar?
I did. I hit stop.
No, you ended the recording.
Oh, okay. So what do I do now?
You have to hit leave meeting, and then you...
I can't hear you, Rose.
You hit leave meeting, and then it will prompt you in the meeting for all.
Okay. I don't see any place where it says leave.
Bottom.
Oh, I see it. End meeting. End meeting for